recently concluded a national climate assessment, which provided no surprising conclusion, which is that rising temperatures are creating an interesting and challenging circumstance for production in the Midwest. It's really a mixed bag for Midwest producers. On the one hand, we're likely going to see longer growing seasons, which could potentially give rise to increased crop productivity. But on the other hand, we're also likely going to experience more extreme weather events, additional and more significant pest and disease risks, all of which could substantially reduce crop production. So that's one of the reasons why we decided to be proactive at USDA in establishing our Climate Hub effort. One of those Climate Hubs is dedicated to the Midwestern region, and in fact, we'll be doing an assessment of the vulnerabilities from weather variability and climate change in terms of agriculture and forestry, and then creating an opportunity for us to work with Iowa State University Extension, the 25 by 25 Coalition, and others to discuss ways in which we might be able to adapt and mitigate to the changes that we are likely to see in production as a result of weather changes. We're also making sure that folks have the latest information available in terms of the impact that a changing climate can have on production. It's one of the reasons why we initiated the Climate Data Initiative. I would encourage you all to take a look at the improved website at climate.data.gov for more information about the changing climate, weather variability, and its impact on agriculture. We also recently published a new greenhouse report that is using very specific and scientific methods for quantifying the changes in greenhouse gas emissions from American agriculture and the carbon storage capacity of our land here in the United States. This complements our efforts at USDA from our GraceNet effort and our Soil Health Campaign effort that's looking at ways in which we can create greater sustainability and healthier soil to the development of tools like Comet Farm, which will give producers the ability to calculate the impact of certain conservation and farming practices to our Conservation Innovation Grant Program, which is really designed as well to take a look at steps that can be taken by producers to mitigate and adapt to the effects and impact of weather variability in a changing climate. Yesterday, I had the opportunity to speak as part of a panel discussion in front of some of these African leaders about the Open Data Initiative. As you may know, we are very interested in making sure that folks have access to the information research that's been conducted at USDA. Along with the United Kingdom, the U.S. Has started the Global Open Data for Agriculture and Nutrition effort. We welcomed IBM, Kellogg, and several African nations to that coalition, which now is 80 strong. The purpose of it is to make data more accessible, more available, and more usable so that it can further our knowledge base and perhaps inform future research projects. And speaking of research, the USDA is engaged with their counterparts across the globe in our Global Research Alliance, 41 countries now participating in looking at crop production, livestock production, and rice production and the impacts and effects of climate change, weather variability on those production processes. The U.S. is helping to lead the crop production aspect of this, and so we will also gain additional efficiencies in terms of research of the impact on agriculture. And we are part of a growing effort across the globe in creating an alliance for climate smart agriculture that really is focused on identifying practices that will ensure continued sustainability economically, environmentally, and socially of agriculture, identify ways in which we can make agriculture in the U.S. and in other countries far more resilient to the changes of the climate, and also ways in which we can continue to focus, as we have here at the U.S., on reducing the emissions from agriculture, American agriculture. Roughly 8% of all of the greenhouse gas emissions in the country directly related to agriculture. That's below the international average of about 14%. So obviously, American producers are doing a good job as we work with livestock producers to capture methane, as we work with double cropping systems and cover crop systems and our soil health campaign. We think there's a lot more that can be done and needs to be done, certainly embracing renewable energy sources through our REAP program, another opportunity. One final comment, part of what we also need to focus on is the way in which our food is used once we produce it. Unfortunately and tragically, 31% of all of American food that is produced in this country is ultimately not consumed. It's wasted, discarded, or thrown out prematurely. That's 133 billion pounds of food, and it's an unfortunate circumstance, especially given the challenge we face as the population of the world continues to increase. It places a great premium on agricultural production. We need to make full advantage not only of our productivity, but also figuring out ways in which we can substantially reduce food waste. That's why we've joined with other federal agencies and over 200 partners in the Food Waste Challenge. Over the course of the next 12 to 18 months, we'll be doing a series of meetings and events to highlight ways in which all of us can do a better job of consumption of food in addition to production. Doctor, I appreciate the opportunity to visit with folks today. We certainly think this is a timely conference and important coalition that you all have put together, and would be happy to answer questions if there are any.
Okay. I'm Cheryl Tevis with Successful Farming Magazine in Des Moines. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question regarding the water emergency, the recent one in Toledo, Ohio. What do you think is the takeaway for farmers out of this this incident?
Well, I will tell you that farmers in Ohio and Michigan along the Great Lakes have been very focused on conservation in this issue. This is not an issue that just cropped up recently. It's an issue that we deal with virtually last several summers. A substantial amount of resources has been invested in conservation to try to mitigate the impact of this. I think it is a reminder of our need to continue to focus on conservation. We're really excited about the response that we've received from our Regional Conservation Partnership Program that the new Farm Bill created. It is a new way of doing business in conservation. It's looking at large-scale watershed areas and key watershed areas, and the Great Lakes certainly part of that. It will see a substantial amount of additional investment that will be matched by the private and nonprofit sector, and I think over time we'll continue to see improvements in our lakes and our rivers and our streams. We did not get into this situation with water quality overnight, and I think it's important for people to understand that there are no quick fixes here. We need to continue to be vigilant. We need to continue to look for creative ways to leverage our resources, and I think the Regional Conservation Partnership will be able to do that. As it relates specifically to the Great Lakes, it's one of the eight critical conservation areas that's been designated by myself pursuant to the Farm Bill, which means that it will be able to compete successfully, I suspect, for a lot of that $1.2 billion that's going to be put into this regional conservation program. And I would think that over time we're going to continue to see improvements.
Good morning, Mr. Secretary. This is Lynn Henderson. I'm with AgriMarketing Magazine and a fellow Iowan.
Hey, Lynn.
I have a question about climate change. What evidence do we have that there is climate change in the process, and when did it begin?
Well, there are a variety of indicators of concern, which is what's prompting our efforts to try to make sure that we mitigate and adapt to a changing climate, whether it's rising sea levels, whether it's the fact that we've experienced extreme temperature increases, and that the scientists who have looked at this are anticipating that we'll likely see somewhere between 2 and 4 degrees Celsius increase in temperatures globally, which will increase sea levels, which will accelerate the melting of the polar cap. That will threaten a lot of coastal areas, and that we'll continue to see what we have seen recently, which is more intense storms with greater punch. longer droughts, more severe flooding, and the some of the challenges that we're currently seeing in our forests as a result of rising temperatures, additional pests and diseases that have created about 40 million acres of diseased trees that substantially increased the fire hazard. You know, obviously, climates change from time to time, but we are seeing higher temperatures and more accelerated and more rapid change over the last several decades, which is what has concerned folks. And the projections for agriculture are that it could significantly change what we grow and where we grow it and how fast we can grow it and how often we can grow it. And I think it's important for the world to be focused on this because we have increased global population estimated at 9 billion, perhaps in the years that I've got remaining on this earth, I hope, and that's going to increase the need for food production by 70%, somewhere between 50 and 70%. I've been told that that will require as much innovation in agriculture in the next 20, 30 years as we've seen in the preceding 10,000 years. So there is a significant challenge that we all face, which means that we have to be more productive. We have to be more sensitive to adaptation and mitigation strategies. We have to do a better job of using the food that we produce. In other countries, we have to do a better job of storing the food that's produced so we actually get it to the plate. So there are a lot of challenges here, but I don't think there's any question that we're seeing warmer temperatures, and I don't think there's any question that there are consequences to those warming temperatures. And if we want to continue to grow what we grow and continue to have an economy that's built in part on agriculture, we obviously need to be sensitive to this and need to be aware of how we might be able to have farmers be better prepared to respond to the changes that they are themselves seeing on the ground.
Hi, Secretary Vilsack. Tom Block here with the Iowa Farm Bureau spokesman. I was just wondering your perspective on getting widespread farmer engagement in this issue, you know, how you think that's gone so far on a voluntary process and what their prospects here are to get people involved, especially, you know, in light with tighter production margins. And some of these strategies, cover crops, things like that, do carry a cost to them.
Well, I'd say, first of all, I think farmers in the Midwest and farmers around the country have embraced conservation practices. We have a record number of acres enrolled in conservation today. It will top, I think, 400 million acres enrolled in one or more conservation programs. We know that conservation works. We've recently done a series of assessments in the Upper Mississippi River Basin, in the Chesapeake Bay area, specifically that show and indicate that voluntary conservation is reducing nitrogen and phosphorus intake into our rivers and streams and reducing the rate of soil erosion. And I think the fact that we continue to see great interest in programs like EQIP, the Conservation Stewardship Program, and some of the other smaller conservation programs indicates that our producers are keen on doing their job of being the best stewards of land and water. They depend on that land and on that water to be able to raise the crops and the livestock that they're raising and support their families and their communities and their country. I'm excited, again, by the opportunities that I see with the Regional Conservation Partnership. There is genuine interest. We have over 560 applications. We put on the board $394 million in the next 2 years in this effort, and we got over $2 billion in application requests. Some of those will require a little bit more work, but there are several hundred that will likely be asked to submit additional information for decision making in September and October, which is obviously not going to be easy because there are a lot of great programs. Those conservation programs have also proposed additional match from the private sector and nonprofit sector that's roughly equivalent to what the federal government would put in. So it's doing exactly what we thought it would do. I think the fact that that in order for folks to get the benefit of crop insurance subsidies, that there'll have to be conservation compliance, I think is also certainly going to be helpful in making sure that folks continue to commit themselves to conservation. And I think, frankly, our ability at USDA to figure out new ways to make conservation profitable by developing ecosystem markets, the capacity to use the benefits of conservation that are measurable and verifiable and certain to allow regulated industries to meet some conservation requirement that they have by investing in land conservation, I think will further increase and encourage more conservation. And the fact that we're working with our sister federal agencies, particularly the Department of Interior, on endangered species and developing a concept of regulatory certainty where essentially in exchange for taking certain conservation practices when a species is threatened to be listed, individual landowners will know that for a period of up to 30 years, they won't be required to do anything else if the species is in fact listed. All of those are incentives and inducements to getting people interested in conservation that are working. We've seen great participation in the sage-grouse effort, seeing great interest in the lesser prairie chicken effort in other parts of the country. So I'm optimistic and bullish about conservation, about voluntary conservation, and about the impact that conservation can have on the rural economy. The last thing I would say about cover crops is that we've seen an increase in cover crop interest, especially as it relates to maintaining scarce water resources as a strategy for mitigating and adapting to weather variability and changes in climate. And we are also beginning to see the development of market opportunities for those crops. So there may be an income aspect to this in addition to the cost aspect.